Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Channel. Our topic today is critical issues in managing pain with opioid therapy. We'd like to thank Integrity Continuing Education for serving as our educational partner and the Postgraduate Institute for Medicine for accrediting the program. We'd also like to thank King Pharmaceuticals for the educational grant to make this program possible. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoverychannelcme.com and taking the post test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post test, and earn free credit for the program, so do it today. Now, we're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in the studio today to talk about managing pain with opioid therapy. Dr. Lynn R. Webster, Medical Director, LifeTree Clinical Research and Pain Clinic, Salt Lake City, Utah. Dr. Gilbert Fanciullo, Director, Pain Management Center, Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center, Lebanon, New Hampshire. And Dr. Bill H. McCarberg, founder, Chronic Pain Management Program, Kaiser Permanente, San Diego, California. Thank you all for joining us today. During the next hour, we will discuss the causes and consequences of inadequately treated pain, best practice approaches to a pain management plan for your patients based on clinical guidelines and available pain management tools, and treatment modalities and new pharmacologic therapies that offer clinicians options to reduce the risk of opioid abuse, misuse, and diversion. But let's begin with a quote from United States Senator Susan Collins of Maine. She said, quote, "It's tragically ironic that while our streets are awash in prescription medications, the undertreatment of pain in legitimate patients remains a national problem." Now, Senator Collins said that back in 2003. Doctors, what does that mean to you? And has anything changed since 2003? Dr. McCarber?
2003, that seems like eons ago, but it's only actually 7 years. And there's more availability for medications to treat pain than there was in 2003. Doctors are prescribing them more, and what's happened is they're more available for legitimate reasons, yet at the same time, those patients that need them aren't getting the drugs that they do need. So even though they're available, they become available on the street as well, yet the people that need it aren't getting them as often as they should.
Since 2003, we've seen a dramatic increase in the amount of substance abuse. That's unfortunately, a lot of it's derived from the legitimate prescribing to pain patients. So although we have a large number of people who still are not receiving adequate treatment, we have a lot of the medications that are in the wrong hands causing significant harm.
And a lot of the media attention to substance abuse reaches the ears of our patients, and our patients worry about becoming addicted themselves. So I spend a lot of time convincing my patients who might be good candidates for opioid therapy that it's probably safe for them to use opioid drugs.
How common is it for you to see a patient whose pain is not well controlled, and what then would be some of the consequences?
Well, you can talk about consequences in multiple different areas. You can talk about it as far as not being able to go to work, so there would be an economic consequence as far as absenteeism. You could talk about it as something called presenteeism, which means they go to work, but they don't function very well and they can't do their job. What I worry about is more when people stop taking medication and then the consequence is a quality of life issue. Let me just give you an example of this. Rofecoxib, which is Vioxx, was taken off the market, gosh, I don't know, maybe in the early 2000s, followed by Valdecoxib or Bextra. Now, when they went off the market, I would like my colleagues here to assume that patients were taking these drugs for a legitimate reason that was trying to control pain. Now, what they did is they looked at when all of these drugs went off the market. These were major drugs that were being used by many, many people. What happened with those patients? Did they start consuming other drugs to treat pain? And what they found is that they didn't consume anything. And what that means is, and what I heard in my practice personally, is that people say, no, I don't want to take that stuff because it causes heart disease and it causes kidney failure, so I'm not taking it. So what they did is they stopped treating their pain. They became less active. They stopped socializing. They didn't go play bingo anymore. They didn't see their kids play soccer. They just stayed at home because the pain was interfering with their function and their quality of life. So unfortunately, when these reports come out about a toxicity of a drug, it's not taken in context. People just stop taking the drug. They don't look for other options. They don't come to us and say, gee, I don't want to take that drug. Is there anything else? They just stop taking it. And the result is a quality of life issue that has tremendous consequences on people's lives.
Well, what can you tell us about some of the barriers to successfully managing patients with chronic pain?
One of the largest barriers is a concern about abuse and addiction, and that's held by both the individual who prescribes the medication as well as the individuals who receive the medications. Many of them don't want to become abusers, or they're concerned that they may be addicted, and physicians are very concerned about causing such a problem as well. But there's another important concern, I think, that, or I should say barrier, and that would be with physicians who are afraid of regulatory problems that they could get into should they start to prescribe medications and opioids and one of their patients is diverting or they're abusing or they become a problem patient. And they're concerned that they may lose their license if they are associated with one or more of these patients, particularly if somebody dies. If somebody dies because they overtake their medicines and they're using them inappropriately, then the physicians are held sometimes accountable for this, unfortunately, and so they're very concerned, and this is a major barrier.
There are other consequences, though, of untreated chronic pain other than just our responsibility and the humane aspects of wanting to relieve people's suffering. I mean, there are psychological consequences, as you all know, of untreated chronic pain. Depression, anxiety, many psychological conditions can emerge for the first time in people who have untreated chronic pain, and they can certainly exacerbate existing psychological conditions. And there are physiological reasons. There's an increased incidence in untreated acute pain of pulmonary embolism, deep venous thrombosis, et cetera. And I think that there's some recent data that shows that the life expectancy of patients with chronic pain is shorter than the life expectancy of control groups.
Why are some physicians more hesitant to prescribe opioid therapy for patients with chronic pain? And is this more common with certain types of physicians?
Well, I think those physicians that have very little understanding about how to prescribe, or they have some experience where a colleague, for example, has been investigated or had some trouble with their license, they're less likely to prescribe. In reality, we've had, certainly in primary care, very little training in prescribing opioids. None of us get it in medical school, or hadn't, certainly when I went through. You don't get it in the residency training. So what we learn or understand is biases that we bring in it from childhood, or what we pick up in accredited courses later on, some of which was not very good. Fortunately, now we're getting some more information about it. And I think that the primary care doctor, the ones that really should be prescribing and treating pain, just because of the sheer numbers of us that are out there, we have less experience and therefore fear this more, where we shouldn't fear it.